Welcome to the Fire Sprinkler Podcast with Chris and Logan.
General Air Products H2 Home is the newest all-in-one 13D pump and tank system on the market. Designed for simple and fast installation in single-family homes, the H2 Home offers contractors a variety of new features, like a removable pump module that makes transport and placement and installation hassle-free, stainless steel pumps for long-term reliability, and a CPVC connection assembly that allows for flexible and fast system hookup. A control panel assembly with extensive automated functionality is also available. Visit generalairproducts.com or call General Air at 800-345-8207 to discuss your 13D pump and tank needs.
Hey everyone, thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast. Before we get started, I wanted to thank everyone who tuned into the NFSA virtual seminar on April 30th and May 1st. It was interesting to work through the switching from an in-person conference and seminar to a pre-recorded, substantially shorter time slot, but I think everyone involved did an excellent job, with Matt Klaus from NFPA setting a fantastic stage with not only the first session, but the best introduction of the entire event. The videos will be available soon, so stay tuned for that one as well as all the other sessions. As usual, thanks to everyone for the support. This episode is my conversation with Scott Hansen from Reliable Sprinkler. We get into kind of an overall picture of pre-action sprinkler systems, the different types, how they operate, things like that. Thanks to everyone for following the social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, hashtag Fire Sprinkler Podcast. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Scott Hansen from Reliable Sprinkler.
Like and subscribe.
Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast. I've got Scott Hansen from Reliable on, and today we are going to talk about pre-action systems. Scott is the man at Reliable to talk about pre-action systems. Oh, don't look so confused. So
you just made that. I'm one of the men.
One of the many men at Reliable who are very proficient in pre-action systems. First, before we get into it, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at Reliable and how you got to working for Reliable?
Well, that's going to take more time than we have this morning to tell that whole story, because it goes way back about 37 years. Anyway, so Scott Hansen, I work right now. I am a technical service manager at Reliable Automatic Sprinkler in the tech service department. If I'm not mistaken, there are 8 of us in our group, not counting our boss and our boss's boss. And, you know, basically our job at Reliable, I've been there, did I say 8 years now? I had my 8-year anniversary on April 1st or April 2nd. Our job there is, honestly, to support our product that we manufacture, the sprinklers and the valves and other devices for water-based systems. And then at the same time, you know, while we're doing that, we support our sales staff and, more importantly, our customers in doing that. And Reliable is very unique in that manner, that's honestly our focus is our customers and supporting the product with them. So, before I came to Reliable, I was on the contracting side of the business for a little over 25 years. And just like we were in our little, talk before we started, I still am a design nerd, NFPA 13 nerd, don't know it all, never will. There's always going to be somebody smarter than me out there, but, I love figuring stuff out, and I used to consider myself an outside the they always say outside the box, but I was an outside the rut kind of guy,
right?
Trying to figure out how we can make a good estimate better and a bad estimate good, you know.
So. As well as doing the same with design too. One of my favorite things, being a designer for Wallace Ken Sprinkler, my family, the sprinkler company started by my grandfather, is finding a building that, it's not a square box, and protecting it, right? Like something that's, you get a church that has a lot of, dome shapes and things like that. And what's the most efficient and effective way to protect this from fire? That's kind of like, the funnest thing about my job is getting a job, or even going to a site project. As a guy, I self-proclaimed fitter in a golf shirt. I'm a fitter with now that does design. I like going to site meetings with guys that only did design And they're looking up right. like, oh, geez, like, you know, it looked good on paper, but now that we're here, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is it. This is what I, you know, if I was putting it in, how would I put it in, right? Like, how would I change my designer's change in the field, right? And try to design it that way.
Yep. Yep.
So we are going to talk about pre-action systems today. Three main different types of pre-action systems, where to use them, preventative maintenance. We'll get pretty heavy into pre-action systems. Why don't we kind of start by kicking off the three types of pre-action systems that are commonly found in the industry right now?
So, you know, when you talk about the three types, and that's always a, I'll say a head scratcher. And if this is our first video, I'll apologize for my hairdo, but my boss likes to give me crap about that anyway. So, but you know, when you talk pre-action, you know, we've got wet systems and dry systems, and then there's the deluge systems, and then, you know, we've got pre-action systems. And you know, when you start looking at that, you know, the three types, and I'm gonna start with single interlock, and then, you know, we've got double interlock, and somewhere in between there's that non-interlock system. And, you know, there's a lot of things in life Scott doesn't understand, and non-interlock is one of them. I mean, I understand how it works, but I don't understand why would you use that system? But anyway, maybe we can figure it out by the end of the conversation.
We can talk our way through it, which is typically how a lot of things get done. So why don't we kind of start with a single interlock pre-action system. Kind of a brief description, and then we'll get into the different types and different arrangements of a single interlock pre-action. If I was to walk into a valve room, it's got a wet, a dry, and then a funky looking valve over in the corner. What am I looking at a single interlock and pre-action system?
Well, quite honestly, and one of my favorite answers is that depends, you know, because when you look at any pre-action system, all right, they all have sprinklers,
yep.
Right? And they all have some type of a detection system. All right. So when you take, you know, one or the other, and then the combination of them, you know, how they interact with each other will determine what type of system you have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you almost have to, you know, when I'm doing a presentation in front of customers or fitters, you know, I always kind of start off the whole conversation with, you know, we talk about, you know, you define a pre-action system, and it's basically a sprinkler system, closed sprinklers, and then you take a detection releasing system with it. And you know, the uniqueness of the detection system is, you know, you've got on a single interlock, for example, you've got three different types of detection. Mm-hmm. All right. You can do a pilot line, all right, which is a mechanical detection system, or you can do an electrical detection system. And when you take the pilot line system, you can break that down in itself and split it in half, so to speak, and go wet pilot and dry pilot.
Right.
All right. So, you know, with a single interlock system, you know, it's a, you know, single one, it's the original pre-action system, because, you know, in reality, it takes, I'll call a pre-action system in a way is a modified dry system, right? It's okay. A hybrid dry system, say it that way. That's the way I would describe it anyway. So you've got a system with closed sprinklers that's got air in it, all right? No water sitting. And, you know, and that air pressure can be pressurized or not, okay? So atmospheric air pressure or you know, like double interlocks, for example, require a minimum of 7 PSI, just like a regular dry system does.
Yep.
But when you start looking at the detection in single, you know, that one interlock is what is going to trip that single interlock system. And that interlock is the detection system only. All right. So when we start looking at a wet pilot line and you know, do you mind if I just kind of go into that a little bit? Or?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, when you think just like wet system, dry system, that's literally the difference between a wet pilot and a dry pilot.
Right.
All right. So a wet pilot line has water sitting right behind either a sprinkler or a pilot line detector. And I talk with my hands a lot. Yep, so nope. That's the only way I can keep rolling. So when we start looking at that, you know, we literally got a sprinkler or a pilot line detector, you know, throughout the area that's covered by this pre-action system. And that pilot line detector, it's a mechanical heat detector is all it is, really.
Yep.
All right. And that when that activates, you know, it releases water pressure out of the pilot line, which then in turn trips the system valve. Okay. Right. It fills the system piping with water. And so we're basically taking that, you know, pre-action system. And at that point, we just turn it into a wet system.
Right.
Because, you know, we still don't have a sprinkler operating. So once you know, we have a sprinkler operate, then we're going to discharge water.
Right. So, okay. So what we're essentially doing with a single interlock and pre-action system is we're taking a system that is a dry system. You got a dry sprinkler system. There's pressure in the, call it discharge piping. And then water or air pressure in the sensing line for that type of activation. And upon activation of the sensing line, now typically when you're doing a system like that, are the discharge sprinklers and the sensing line sprinklers the same temperature?
No, absolutely not. Okay. And that's an NFPA requirement that, you know, if you've got, and it's true for electrical heat detectors too. Now, when you get into smoke, and I'll clarify too that, you know, when we start talking about electricity, I'll be the first to admit that it is magic.
Yep.
I understand the water and the mechanics of that. Electricity is magic. It's just no other way for me to say it. But good question, because when you look at a sprinkler system, let's say we're using, you know, I'm just going to say ordinary temperature sprinklers on the system itself, and we're using either like 155-degree solder link, 165-degree solder link or 155-degree glass bulb,
yep.
We're required to use a heat detector that is at a lower temperature.
Right.
So typically what you'll see then is either, you know, like 135-degree type heat detector, whether it's you know, the fixed temperature release pilot line detector or sprinkler. And then when you talk electric detectors, heat detectors, we utilize 135 degrees as a common temperature. So.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And the idea behind that then is that it's going to operate first, mm-hmm. which will trip the system, fill the system piping with water. So now we've got, you know, our instant firefighter is ready to work when the fire builds and activates the sprinkler on the system, and then the water's right there to discharge. I mean,
yeah, it's, I mean, as complicated as it sounds, it's really not when you see them working. And maybe I'll try to find a little video to attach to get a little bit of feedback. I'll try to find a little video of something to attach to the end of the video just as a better explanation. Sorry, I was getting a lot of feedback there for a second, an echo. I think it might still be coming in. Anyways, so where would I use a single interlock and pre-action system in the field? Like if I was to walk into a valve room and I knew the hazard it was protecting, what would the benefit of a single interlock and pre-action system be over a wet system or a dry system?
Well, it, you know, I guess, you know, when you start looking at where, you know, where are you going to use a dry system over a wet system, you know, so cold areas.
Right.
All right. Where the water in the system piping. And if you're doing a cold area with pilot lines, you got to use a dry pilot line.
Yep.
For the same reason, you don't have water in the pipe system piping, you don't want water in the pilot line piping as well. And when you start looking at the pre-actions, you know, you've got, you know, the, I'll call them, you know, we like to say water sensitive areas.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that can be cold storage. That can be, you know, museums, libraries, anything that, computer rooms, data center, a big thing with pre-action systems in that respect, you know, because, you know, you have a wet system and it's like the fear is, oh my God, I'm going to get my computers wet or, you know, we can't have that. So we want to put some extra layers of levels of safety in there, so to speak.
Right.
So what can we do to preempt an accidental discharge of water?
Absolutely. So taking the single interlock and pre-action system, going right into the double interlock and pre-action system, because the non-interlocking system, I mean, it is what it is, but the double interlock and pre-action system, what are the main differences between a double interlocking and a single interlock and pre-action system? Obviously, there's two of them, if you look at just the name, but as far as operating, what are the main benefits? And let's just start with how a double interlock and pre-action system works.
Yep. So I'm gonna take your question and I'm gonna answer it my way. Yeah.
That's why you're on.
Take a step. All right. So we've got the single interlock, we've got the double interlock, and we've got the non-interlock. All right. And no matter which type of those systems you have, you will not get water, assuming we don't have a Bob driving his forklift through the sprinkler pipe. Okay.
Bob.
When you look at any of those pre-action systems, before you'll ever get water discharging, you have to have a sprinkler open.
Right.
Okay. So the single and the double interlock, in reality, when it comes down to, and the non-interlock in there, thrown in there too, the biggest thing is it's not about when the sprinkler is discharging water, it's about when the valve is tripped.
Right.
Okay. So, we talk single interlock, the only thing that'll trip that single interlock system is that detection. All right. So, when you look at double interlock, unlike the ice cream stores, I'm an ice cream guy, and two scoops is always better than one. Single and double interlock maybe doesn't apply. Double is not twice as slow, but it's a slower system to discharge water.
Right.
Simply because before the valve trips, now we not only have to have the detection system firing off, we also have to have the sprinkler open and discharging air pressure out of the system piping to trip the valve. So, like the single interlock, basically detection operated, activated, and turned that system wet, mm-hmm. right? Because it trips the valve, fills the system piping with closed sprinklers with water. The double interlock is kind of just, not just the opposite, but when the detection system activates, it basically takes that system and turns it into a dry system now.
Right.
All right. So now the sprinkler operates, and then we have to evacuate enough air pressure out of the system piping where we'll get the valve to trip. All right. So if the single interlock will turn your pre-action system into a wet system, basically, and your double interlock will turn your pre-action system into a dry system.
So essentially, what, like, the difference between where you would install a single and a double is a pre-action system is where you don't want any accidental discharge, and a double interlock is where you really don't want any accidental discharge, right? Because you've got to go through two steps in order for that system to actually discharge water. Now, does it matter the order that something goes on? If you've got like a double interlocking pre-action system, closed sprinklers on the discharge piping, closed sprinklers on the sensing line, if the discharge sprinklers go off, that puts it into a trouble or a signal on the fire alarm panel or whatever's controlling that deluge, that pre-action valve, which kind of gives you a warning like, hey, you got some stuff going down.
Yep.
And then eventually you get into the full alarm when you get obviously when the water flows, you get a full flow alarm, sending the fire trucks, signal the panel, yep. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So when you start looking at that, and this applies only to single and double interlock. But like you have a sprinkler operator, I like to use Bob as an example, and he's not very good at driving a forklift, or, you put Bob on the forklift and the forklift becomes a sprinkler magnet.
Yeah. as a service guy. So, yeah, I know. it's always Bob too. Yeah. Bob, he just left. It's crazy.
Yeah. So loss of air pressure in the system is, will not trip a single or a double interlock on itself. But you will get a low air alarm, all right, saying, hey, you got issues here, let's get these figured out.
Yep.
With that, and can I guess I go off on tangents, so bear with me, but I'm gonna talk briefly about, we haven't touched it, we talked about non-interlock, we both kind of went, it's one of those systems. And the uniqueness of a non-interlock system, all right, so if it's just like the single and the double interlocks, there's detection and sprinklers. There's pressurized piping,
yep.
Right? But if the detection system fires first, it acts like a single interlock pre-action, all right? So it fills the system piping and waits for the sprinkler to open so it can discharge onto the water onto the fire.
Right.
On the other hand, if sprinkler operates first, drops air pressure in the system, it trips the valve itself, and discharges water just like a dry system would. So it's either a single interlock or a dry system. And you know, I'll get in trouble for saying this maybe out loud because, you know, our ownership may be listening, but, you know, I just don't understand, you know, from my standpoint, why don't you just put a dry system in there?
Yeah.
Or a single interlock reaction. Dry system's going to be cheaper, you know, so I shouldn't say let's not sell that one, but, you know, for all practical reasons, if you're going to have that, scenario anyway, dry system will do the job for
just
you.
Just put a dry system in.
So I got to apologize to my, you know, in the sprinkler world, we have attention deficit disorder, so ADD, and I utilize my right for that. Did I answer your last question?
Oh, you were speaking about the ADD and sprinkler, and I don't even know. Anyways, we'll just move on. I feel like you did in a roundabout way. We were talking about the double interlock and pre-action system.
I apologize. You asked if the detection and sprinkler, do they have to happen at the same time?
Yes.
So, no. So they can happen in either order. Mm-hmm. All right. The system has to function either way. But they both have to be actively operated. Like on a double interlock, for example, they both, the detection and the sprinkler have to both be actively operating
right
before the valve will trip. They don't have to happen at the same time, and they can happen in either order. So I apologize for that.
Well, that's cool. We're just talking sprinkler, and you know, if you were talking to somebody in the office or in the field about pre-action systems, this is probably the way it would go down anyways. Is there a way now, thinking about it, we've got Bob there on the forklift. He's hit 6 different in-rack sprinklers in the past week. You know, he's cost the company a fortune in damaged goods, service calls, et cetera, which don't get me wrong. I'm going to take those service calls any day of the week. Can we take a single interlock and pre-action system or a non-interlock and pre-action system and easily convert it to a double interlock? And so that, you know, Bob's got to really hammer on that gas to take out 2 pipes to damage the product.
You know, with the magic, you know, if you're protecting, like say we're doing a in-rack system,
yep,
and protecting with pre-action and with the magic of electricity, I'll say it that way. You can typically convert, you know, an electrically actuated system easier than a mechanical type system.
Right. Which, and if we're talking about a warehouse, that's, I mean, in my area, typically, if it's protecting like a warehouse area, it's going to have the electric actuation up at the ceiling running down into the racks and stuff like that. You're not going to have 2 pieces of pipe in racking. That's 9 times out of 10. Actually, I don't think I've seen it in my area ever. It's all electric actuation if it's in a warehouse for coolers and stuff.
And with electric actuation, you know, then you've got, typically you'll have, you know, if it's a true, and I know you said we'll touch on the different double interlock actuation, mm-hmm. you know, between the electric, pneumatic, and pneumatics. But if you've just got a single electric solenoid valve as your actuation device on the deluge valve itself, you know, through the magic of programming and electricity, you know, you can, you know, granted there may have to be some wiring changes in the releasing control panel, but, you know, it's not that difficult to convert from a single to a double interlock.
Right.
It's very important that the guy that's making that conversion understands and knows what he's doing.
What is typical in most aspects of fire protection, you want to know what you're doing if you're going to work and play around with our sprinklers for the moment.
Yep. Absolutely.
Which is kind of the idea on the whole podcast is just, you know, I've said it 1,000 times. Sorry if you've heard this 1,000 times, anybody listening, watching, whatever they're doing now. But you know, the good thing about this industry is that everybody wants to learn all the time. Sprinkler isn't a, you know, I just had a video that I put out of a guy at the Seneca, career and business dinner. Mm-hmm. He was sitting and he was talking about continuing education and constantly learning in our industry, because the guys that are in their you know, late 50s and 60s that have been trying to retire for 5 years. They've been continuously learning since they started their career in the late 70s, early 80s, right? And it's trying to get the new guys. And I've been a big advocate for sprinkler as well, is I think sprinkler fitters should require continuing education, just like most designers in the States. I know you have the, CEUs that you have to get in order to maintain your license. I think the same thing should be available for sprinkler and a requirement.
Yeah, I agree. You can't, education is a good thing.
Yeah.
Even if it's just something simple.
Yeah, exactly. And, so the way I worded it, we'll go off on another tangent here. The way I wanted to word it here in Ontario, was, not sick, with all the safety training and things like that, that are, working from heights in Ontario, which is like fall arrest and harness training, man lift training should all count as, say, a credit. But you'd be required to get, say, 9 credits a year, right? You should, or every 3 years or whatever, right? Your safety training would make up, say, 75% of them, but you would still be required to take 3, what we call them in Ontario is a fitter upgrade class, where I'm a union sprinkler fitter, so our local union puts on training upgrading classes, but it could also be available from manufacturers, CPVC installation licenses, things like that, just different ways to maintain your license. That NFPA 13 standard changes every 3 years, right? I'll show you just, actually, I've got it right here, so I'll grab it. This was the standard when my old man got his license, right?
Yeah.
That's NFPA 13 from when my old man got his license. And this is the 2019.
Yeah.
So it's not a, and if you're listening on the podcast, I've essentially got a piece of paper that's been folded in half 6 times. And that's the 1978 NFP. It's actually NFPA 13A. And then this is the NFPA 13 from 2019, which is like a pretty hefty read there if you're looking to sit down and read.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's funny you bring those up. I recently did a little spring cleaning in my garage, and in one, I have a file cabinet out there, and you get to the bottom of that one drawer, and wow, this is so cool. I found my original 1987 NFPA 13, and it's a little bit thicker than the one you just showed me, but it's regular size. It's not, not a condensed version, or a smaller version. But what a drastic change compared to, where we are today.
It's crazy. And I like, sprinkler nerd, sprinkler, mildly sprinkler obsessed. Don't, you can ask the old lady, she'll confirm. I do a sprinkler podcast. How obsessed do you have to be to just want to talk sprinkler all the time? Anyways, I've got over in my corner, my COVID quarantine project is I've got a Supertex valve that's over in the corner that was never installed. My project is to get that as a trippable, testable device. I've got the 1/8 inch copper lines. I've got the, I've got the spec sheets, I've got the data sheets. So I'm hoping to get like a, an old Supertex deluge valve back in service in my basement. Do you have one of those? I'm assuming.
You never know, and you might need it in the basement. So.
Well, especially my house. So it's not. Anyways, getting back on topic, pre-action. We kind of went off there a little bit. Different preventative maintenance, care and maintenance requirements for the different pre-action systems. Are they all pretty much straightforward across the board, or is there different preventative maintenance requirements for each?
Well, generally speaking, I would say, if you start looking at NFPA 25 for the ITM of any of the systems, the pre-actions are all going to kind of fall into the same maintenance, inspection, and testing modes. And up front, I said I'm an NFPA 13 nerd. I try to be knowledgeable about NFPA 25, but I still have to look stuff up in NFPA 13. So, but I really have to look stuff up in NFPA 25. But preventative maintenance, it's not that much different than your wet system and dry system with the added burden, I guess I would say, or the added things you have to do is, you not only have to make sure you're maintaining proper pressures and supervisory pressures, make sure those are set correctly and your air supply, nitrogen supply, whatever is operating correctly. But you also got to test then, your detection systems. And it's sad when in my contracting days, and you've seen this too, probably, especially if you've done service work or doing service work, you go out to a system and it's like, how did this thing ever function? You have to test it. And one thing that we do on our tech service line at Reliable is, we answer a lot of questions like this and, hey, this isn't working right. And not only, it's not just a one-way test. Don't just test the detection system and then test the sprinkler.
Right.
Do it the other way as well. Make sure it functions that way.
What would you say, we're going to leave non-interlocking out of this 100%, but,
okay.
I'm building a warehouse, 30,000 square foot warehouse. Some of it's going to be cold. Some of it's going to be regular heated. Don't want to damage the product. Your recommendation, what's the benefit of putting a single interlocking system in as opposed to a double? Like, why not just go immediately to a double interlock and pre-action system and just remove the possibility of a trip?
And I think that's one of the biggest reasons double interlocks have become so popular, throughout, NFPA, if you read the, like in the handbooks, especially if you read the commentary in the handbooks or the designer's corners, things like that, it actually talks about, you can put a double interlock system wherever you choose. If your customer has the money and wants to pay you to put that system in his house,
right,
go for it. the intent of a double interlock was for cold storage applications,
right?
Because if you look at a regular dry system through the evolution of the double interlock system, we'll talk it that way or look at it that way. You look at a dry system because, that's cold storage. Now we can't put a wet system in there, so we'll put a dry system in there. And, then you start looking at, we're going to build our building taller. So, now we can't. The overhead system isn't going to cover. So now we're going to put, piping and sprinklers in the racks. And, now that the racks are higher, Bob needs a forklift. So we give Bob a forklift. And what we talked about earlier, Bob, forklift, sprinkler magnet. By every time Bob took the sprinklers in the racks out, the system tripped and they're dumping water and it's just a mess. Yep. And a lot of dollars. So solution to that, what if we just take that detection system that we used on the deluge system outside,
yep,
and we tie it in with this, dry system in the warehouse now, in the cold storage warehouse. And we'll just tie the two together. So when Bob takes out the sprinkler pipe and we lose air pressure, we know Bob did it, but now we're not dumping water. That's right.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And then Bob starts taking out the detection instead. So now we're tripping the system. Same thing. Right. So the double interlock comes about because, now even if he takes out the detection system, we still get a warning shot.
Yep.
Okay. As long as Bob doesn't figure out if he takes them both out at the same time, we should probably put that disclaimer out there Bob, we don't mean this in a bad way about any Bobs out there, but it just works out.
Yeah. If you happen to be a guy named Bob who drives a forklift and listens to the Fire Sprinkler podcast, it wouldn't be the first time Bob on a forklift has been mentioned on the podcast. I'm very confident that's the guy who always hits sprinklers with forklifts. We mentioned it, but we didn't really get into electronic activation of systems. What are the different kinds of electronic activation that can be applied to sprinkler systems? Like, I know there's smoke detectors, heat detectors, but you know, other types of, I mean, I call them FireWire from the fitter side of things, but how do those different systems work?
Well, you know, I mean, so the FireWire, you're talking like linear detection, right?
Yes.
So, ProtectaWire is a brand.
ProtectaWire.
There's other ones out there, but you know, that's a heat detector. It's just a linear heat detector instead of a single point heat detector.
Right.
And you see those a lot of times on like in-rack systems where they'll actually be attached along the sprinkler piping. So, you know, you're talking, and remember, I'm a sprinkler guy and electricity is magic. So my disclaimer to that is you can use any type of detection system that is basically approved or blessed by NFPA 72.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, you've got your smoke detectors, your heat detectors, regular heat detectors, the linear detection, there's infrared, there's all kinds of, electronic eyes.
I call them fire eyes. Again, dropping it down to the fitter letter, fire eyes.
Photoelectric or
magic.
Magic, yep. Electricity.
Yep. So many different kinds.
You know, depending on what the application of what you're using, I think the most common, you know, in any system I ever done, you know, heats or smokes.
Yeah.
And unless you get into, you know, like if you're outside, then you get, you know, that doesn't work real well. So then you got to use the optical stuff and then when you start looking at, you know, airplane hangars, things like that, they get into some specialized type detectors that are, you know, you're not going to use in the cold storage building.
Right.
But you could, I guess, but just drives the price up.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, I mean, as a contractor,
that's what it's all about. Right?
That's, well, I mean, it's also about saving lives.
That's most important.
Absolutely.
We all need to eat. So
yeah. Is there anything else that you, you want to make sure that's very clear about pre-action systems before we kind of wrap this up? That's about going on 35 minutes. Like I said, I'll talk sprinkler forever. Okay. Is there anything specific, that you want to mention about pre-action systems, kind of, disclaimers or, recommendations as far as selecting or installing a pre-action system?
Well, you know, I guess a good spot to finish up would be not that I've accomplished anything anyway, but we'll hopefully it'll sound somewhat intelligent when you podcast this. But, you know, when you start looking at the double interlocks, in a double interlock specifically, you know, we can break that down and there's really three types of double interlock actuations. Okay.
Right.
So when you look at, you know, I think the most common across the industry, and I guess I'll kind of speak it, you know, for reliable, and I don't know all the numbers, but electric, all right. And then there's, you know, my favorite, electric pneumatic. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a pneumatic actuation. All right. So, you know, when you start looking at those different types of actuations, you know, and we get that call and when I'm doing other presentations, you know, I'll try to, you know, if I got a sales guy with me from that I'm traveling with, I usually pick on them and say, hey, Mike, why would you, you know, I got three choices. Which one should I use, you know? And, you know, it just depends on what you're protecting. But electric actuation and all that's the Reader's Digest version of electric, because when you look at electric and electric pneumatic, technically they're both electric pneumatic.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
And you know, the pneumatic part, we just change what is actually triggering or completing that, that interlock, so to speak.
When you say electric, break that down just a little bit more, right? Cause it's a pneumatic, yep. It's a pneumatic loss of air pressure that's triggering a solenoid, correct? Is that what you're referencing when you say electric?
Yep.
Okay.
So like I say, at Reliable, we do the Reader's Digest version. So, right. You know, it's electric because in the end, it's two electrical signals in the release and control panel that are going to basically talk to that solenoid valve and energize it to open it.
Yep.
All right. So, you know, when you look at the electric detection, that's just self-explanatory there. And then, you know, the other side of the interlock is the sprinkler opening, and we have lost air pressure. That's all mechanical. That's a mechanical type event.
Right.
And what we do is, you know, just like when I'm trying to order a beer in Mexico, I sometimes need a translator, right?
Yep.
So we have a translator, you know, an interpreter, so to speak, between the sprinkler and the solenoid valve.
Right.
And that interpreter is that low air supervisory switch.
Right.
So supervisory switch basically is wired into the releasing control panel as a, you know, activation circuit. So it's part of the releasing system now.
Okay.
So the correction system fires off, then we have a sprinkler operate, we lose enough air pressure in the system that the switch closes. Once the switch closes, it sends a second electrical signal then in to the releasing control panel. Once both those signals are basically talking to each other inside the releasing control panel at the same time, we talk to the solenoid valve and energize and open the solenoid valve. Because that type of actuation trim will just have a single solenoid on the actuation trim of the valve itself.
Right. So the two forms of activation are essentially the two keys for the nukes, right? You need both keys to turn at the, not at the same time, but you need both keys to turn in order to hit the go button and flood the system.
Yep. So when you look at, you know, that electric, as I'm calling it.
Yep.
And if you go to, you know, the other guys out there that are making systems like this as well, their terminologies, you know, everybody's got a little bit different, but a lot of times what you'll see there is you'll see the electric, all right, your detection side slash, in reality, it's pneumatic dash electric.
Right. Yep.
And a lot, you know, a couple of the other guys, they'll say it different, but they'll say new electric, and that's PNEU.
Yes.
Electric. So it's basically a electric slash pneumatic electric type system.
Okay.
And then when you go into the you know, a truly electric pneumatic system, you know, we all do it a little bit differently, but in reality, you've got two separate actuation devices. You've got an electric solenoid and you've got a mechanical pneumatic actuator, and they're separate.
Okay. That is,
so, you know,
a lot of information compacted. It's not even a short episode. That's 40 minutes of information regarding pre-action systems. I think it was a lot in 40 minutes. I think we're going to get some questions. So, if anybody has a question, you know, I don't know if I do the comment below, fire me off an email at info@firesprinklerpodcast or chris@firesprinklerpodcast. If there's any questions, we'll have you back on just for clarification, and we'll go from there. Scott, thanks for coming on. Scott Hansen from Reliable. Excellent. And hopefully we talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, everyone. This episode of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast is done. If you liked this episode, leave a review, comment, or hop over to my social media pages and let me know. Just search Fire Sprinkler Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Don't forget to hashtag Fire Sprinkler Podcast and anything you think I should know about or see. If you have any suggestions for future episodes of the Fire Sprinkler Podcast, email info@firesprinklerpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Take care.